Hello and welcome to M&A Murders and Accusations, the good, the bad, and the ugly of selling your business. We dig into what you need to know and how not to kill the sell of your business. Now here's our host, Rick J. Krebs, Mergers and Acquisitions Advisor.
Hi everyone, this is Rick J. Krebs, coming to you from the mountains of Heber City, Utah, talking all things M&A, mergers and acquisitions. Today we're going to talk about something that has killed a lot of deals. This is something that I can send death certificates out on for people who don't know what they're doing and haven't dealt with it. Concept is called working capital, something you may not have heard from or heard about or know what it is, but something that's very, very important as you're looking to sell a business. Very important to know about working capital. If you have a business that's worth less than $1.5 million, it's not really applicable. It doesn't come into play because your selling price generally includes a base price, and then any inventory or receivables or cash are in addition to the negotiated price. So underneath $1.5 million, you don't have to worry about it. But transactions that are over $1.5 million, the buyers are going to negotiate to get some working capital included. So let me tell you about working capital and start with a story. Years ago, I was selling a pet store, and in this pet store, and so I don't remember the price, it was like $800,000. And anyway, it was that plus inventory. And as we went and we closed the transaction and we went and we started counting inventory, we found all of this dog food that was really old and outdated. And the buyer didn't want to buy it. Buyer's like, hey, this is outdated. I don't want to buy it. And the seller's like, gee, what am I going to do with it? So we had to figure out how to deal with where the dates had expired on this dog food. And plus, the seller had sold a lot of the inventory off the shelves and hadn't replenished it. So the concept of working capital is one where at the letter of intent stage, you define how you're going to calculate it, or you define an exact number. And you come to an agreement on that right up front. And if you don't, it's something that can kill your deal. I mean, I can send you a death certificate on ones that have died because people didn't handle this, or ones that have blown up and then they come to me and want me to close them. It's something that can really catch you later on if you don't do something about it, and you don't either determine how you're going to calculate it or determine what that target amount is and how it works. Let's say that you're selling your company for $10 million. It includes a normal amount of working capital. And working capital, the accounting definition of working capital is current assets minus current liabilities. What that means in layman's terms is cash, receivables, inventory, prepaids and deposits, any billings in excess of the cost or costs in excess of billings would be the liability side. And then it is minus accounts payable, deferred revenue, accrued expenses. So any short-term debts and short-term liabilities or current liabilities, and that long-term debts are generally the responsibility of the sellers. So why is this important? Well, if you're on a cash basis reporting system and the buyer wants you to switch to an accrual, you have no idea what your accruals are. You have no idea what accrued vacation is. And I've seen transactions where that amount's sizable, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. And that liability becomes a negative dollar for dollar to your selling price at closing. And so you've got to know what the target should be so it doesn't become a deduction for you at closing. I don't know about you, but several hundred thousand dollars is real money to me, and it should be to you. So the working capital calculation, working capital knowledge of, and it might even not be in your financials, but you're going to want to look at it, try and figure out what your accrued liabilities are. Another thing that I see catch people is deferred revenue. That's a liability. You see billings in excess of costs and costs in excess of billings. Engineering firms particularly have those. So both on the asset side and on the liability side, you know what it is going in and you know how to negotiate it coming out, and it won't kill your deal. Because what happens is we get real close to closing, and like with the pet store, they're trying to figure out what are they going to do with this stale inventory? What are they going to do with, you know, the inventory that's gone? Because the buyer, in addition to the purchase price, had to go out and buy a bunch more inventory. So generally, if you're over $1.5 million in value, the buyers don't want to have to put additional cash in the business to run the business. So you determine what that is. And then at the closing, if you had less working capital, then the selling price is decreased dollar for dollar. If it's more, then you would get an addition to the selling price. And we always try and get you more. It's a little sweetener at the end versus a little jab in the eye with a sharp stick, right? The last thing that you want to do. Working capital, I told you the accounting definition, but the working definition of working capital is, working capital is whatever the buyer and seller agree it is. You know, I've seen transactions where we exclude certain things, where we include certain things that we wouldn't normally do. So make sure that your letter of intent specifies. And I even like to see numeric examples in letter of intent where we take the balance sheet and we go line item by line on it. This is what's included. This is what's excluded. And this is why and how we're going to calculate it. So as you're negotiating that letter of intent, make sure that your expectations align and you'll have a better outcome in the end. Now that we've taken a look at working capital, I want to look at another thing that is really important but often overlooked. It's a little known form. It's an IRS form, Form 8594. And what this is after a sale of a business, when the tax returns are filed both for the buyer and the seller, they're required to file this form, which indicates how the allocation of the assets was agreed upon. And so they look at how the buyer files it, they look at how the seller files it, and then they compare them and they should match. The reason that this is important is, well, it's first of all, it's only important on an asset sale. You're doing a stock sale, you don't have to worry about it. But on an asset sale, it's extremely important how you allocate or how you agree to allocate the assets. And most people kind of scratch their head and go, well, gee, that's pretty simple. You know, it's cash, receivables, it's inventory if you have it, furniture, fixtures, equipment, and goodwill, right? But certain of those assets have zero gain. For instance, cash. You're selling cash for your cash. Your basis is what you're selling it for. So there's zero gain on the sale of cash. Now, receivables, on the other hand, the gain on those are subject to ordinary income, right? And it depends if you're a cash basis taxpayer or an accrual basis taxpayer, but it can either be 100% taxable as ordinary income to the seller or 0% taxable. And do you want to allocate money to ordinary income that you have not received? If you have receivables that are deemed maybe uncollectible, do you want to pay cash on money that you don't receive, which is a potential if you don't allocate that properly? The other one is inventory. If you're keeping track of your inventory or goes through cost of goods sold. And so what there is the IRS has these classes of assets on this Form 8594. And how it works is certain classes of assets are more beneficial to the buyer. For instance, if there's more allocation toward the furniture, fixtures, and equipment, then a buyer gets to accelerate that through the Section 179 deduction on the year of acquisition up to the limits. But anyway, they can accelerate the depreciation, take it all in their first year. And if not, you know, they get to depreciate those items between 5 and 7 years. Whereas if you allocate less to FF&E and more to goodwill, then the buyer gets to amortize that goodwill or blue sky over 15 years. So do they get to take 100% of the deduction in year one, or do they get to take it over 15 years? And as you know, that can swing their tax bill quite a bit. And so how you allocate the assets and how you agree to this allocation can be extremely important in the sale. This is one of those things that a lot of people don't deal with in letter of intent stage or early on, and it can be a point of contention later on in the transaction since it hasn't been dealt with. It's like, you know, you've got an issue coming up. You just kind of hold your breath and cross your fingers and close your eyes and hope it goes away, right? And sometimes I see buyers be a little more passive aggressive and they won't deal with this early on. They'll wait and deal with it intentionally toward the end of the transaction when the sellers have deal fatigue and they're tired of it and they're just done, and sellers would give up concessions, which they normally wouldn't give up at the beginning of the transaction. So as you're thinking about this and you're looking at it, when you're doing your working capital target calculation, you definitely also want to consider how you're going to allocate the assets. We had one client and we ended up allocating the assets based on the tax return versus on the financial statements. And you know, it was a pretty good swing. I think it was an $80,000 difference in their tax. So look at this, have your CPA look at it, have your advisor look at it. It's Form 8594, often overlooked but very important part of the transaction. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember, working capital is important, and Form 8594, that asset allocation is important when you're negotiating and when you're selling a business. Have a great day, and thanks for tuning into our podcast. Until next time, this is Rick J. Krebs, your M&A cowboy, coming to you from the mountains of Utah.
Thank you for attending our podcast. We invite you to join us for future episodes of M&A, Murders and Accusations, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Selling Your Business. You can also visit us at www.bsalesgroup.com or email Rick directly at rick@bsalesgroup.com.